This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for listening. Well, the 2016 Olympic Games came to a close last night. Simone Biles carried the flag for the United States in those closing ceremonies. Given all the warnings of doom for the Rio Games, it went off pretty much without a hitch. And now Japan takes the torch. Tokyo will host the Summer Games in 2020. And when it does, we'll be in the middle of an election again. Probably President Clinton or President Trump will be defending their first term. In a moment, one author strikes out across America to find Trump voters, who they are, what they want, and where they might be in 2020, win or lose, for Donald Trump. But first, reports emerged this weekend that Donald Trump may be looking to abandon his policy to round up and deport the estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants in this country. Trump met with conservative Hispanic leaders on Saturday, where immigration did come up. Trump is doing poorly with Hispanic voters and suburban white moderates. And at first, this seemed like a standard election move to the middle. But this isn't a standard election. Trump's surrogates injected a whole lot of ambiguity into those reports. Newly minted campaign manager Kellyanne Conway was asked whether Trump still backs what he's repeatedly called a deportation force.
As the weeks unfold, he will lay out the specifics of that plan that he would implement as president of the United States. To be determined.
To be determined. Senator Jeff Sessions, another strong Trump backer, also said that Trump was struggling with policy on deportation. But to Trump's white nationalist backers, there is no ambiguity on this issue. The internet lit up with angry backlash from the alt-right. Breitbart News, which up until last week was the charge of Trump's new top campaign man, Stephen Bannon, made it clear to readers there is no movement on immigration from Trump. Now, Trump seems to have no wiggle room at all with the constituency he's chosen for this general election. Dave Weigel has been following the Trump campaign for the Washington Post and writing about the white nationalists who are celebrating a presidential run they can finally call their own.
When I saw that news, I recognized it as kind of the latest in a series of Trump floats of ideas that I think are meant now by the Conway side to say that he's not as dangerous as you might think to some voters, but not credible enough to really warn off the diehard Trump voters who voted for him before the immigration reason.
Still, there have been a number of moves of late, an appeal to African-American voters, this public meeting with Hispanic leaders, ambiguous language from Trump or at least his surrogates on immigration. What is the target audience here? Is it the minority groups that Trump is doing so poorly with, Hispanic and black voters, or is it somebody else?
On the margins, if Trump improves just a little with black and Hispanic voters, just to where Mitt Romney was, he's in better shape. So there's a little bit of that going on. But the people I've talked to, and that includes Pat Buchanan at the end of last week, recognize this as more of a signal to white voters that they can vote for Donald Trump and they're not going to be doing anything racist. They can reject everything that they hate about modern America. They can reject the Black Lives Matter movement. They can reject criticism of the police, affirmative action, et cetera, et cetera. But they have a candidate who sympathizes but is not racist.
Well, that's really interesting, Dave. That would suggest then, if that's true, that this outreach to black voters, such as it was, the meeting with Hispanic voters, is sort of the optics of moral cover for uncomfortable whites.
I would point out that Trump always had an immigration position that was sort of pragmatically brutal. There was going to be a deportation force, and it would efficiently pull people out of the country, then efficiently let the good ones back in. And if this doesn't sound terribly coherent, it never was. It was just a combination of the hardest line policy on getting rid of illegal, undocumented immigrants and the soft line, actually what Mike Pence used to favor when he was in the Congress, policy of letting people work here as long as they behave well. And I guess the reason that that hasn't bothered his base is because they're worried about their threat to their livelihood. Then they are worried about immigrant crime to a degree larger than data suggests they should be. And he answered that pretty well.
So if there is this kind of ambivalent moral signaling to suburban white voters who might be uncomfortable voting for Trump, even though part of them wants to, the alt-right reacted very swiftly and very angrily to this. Now, you've been covering some of the white nationalists and others who care a lot about this issue and care a lot about the Trump campaign. Any ambiguity, Dave, they had to have known there would be a swift and angry reaction here.
There's a great faith in the Trump base, the hardcore Trump base, that he is going to act on the things they care about, and if he signals anything else, he is doing that to get elected. What they were most interested in from Trump at first was him demolishing the supporters of amnesty and the people who wanted to soften the Republican Party's approach on criminal justice reform and those kinds of things. Those guys watched Trump beat up Jeb Bush and beat up Marco Rubio, and they have a lasting affinity from that. They think that is more telling of where he's going to be than any policy that's floated during the campaign. This is a guy who hates the same thing they hate.
So Trump gives an immigration speech on Thursday where ostensibly he lays out some of this in more detail. Where does all this go, do you think, given how poorly he's doing with suburban whites, certainly with minority voters and this loyal core constituency that you're talking about on the right?
For years, but really since 2013, when Democrats tried to move on this, if you can ask the question, and this is, I think, a problem for all the many business interests that keep funding lobbying and then being surprised they don't win, you can definitely frame the question so that it sounds like people are fine with more immigration. The more elemental, more energetic opinion is against everything, and there is a sort of voter who thinks he's for immigration but doesn't like the making it incredibly easy to stay here if you're here illegally. So it's an issue where the public's perceptions are distorted, like many, but one where they've been particularly distorted because there's so many ways to ask what they want. Trump, in the speech, having not seen the text of it, if he summarizes what he said all year, which is, if you're good, you can stay in. If you're bad, we're going to kick you out hard. That might even be covered as a pivot, but people who like him for the immigration reason are going to stick with him.
The Trump base and immigration in a moving target. Perhaps we'll know more on Thursday. Dave Weigel with The Washington Post. Dave, thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me.
So whether or not Donald Trump can or even wants to moderate his stance on immigration, that'll depend a lot on who his voters really are and what they really want. Alexander Zaychuk spent a lot of time with Trump voters in places like Arizona and Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, California. And the truth is that there is no single portrait of a Trump supporter. With over 13 million Trump voters in the primary, Zaychuk doesn't claim to speak for all of them. But he did get to know over 100 Trump supporters in a book that lets Trump voters speak at length for themselves. It's called The Gilded Rage, A Wild Ride Through Donald Trump's America. And Zaychuk says that race is just one part of a complex picture here.
You're not going to be able to extract the racial aspect to the Trump phenomenon and put it in this test tube and say this is quantifiable, this is how much of it is going on. It's impossible to disentangle from everything else. However, I believe after talking to all these people, and again, just six dates, not 13 million of them, and I can't say for certain how honest everyone was with me, but I did get to know these people quite well. I spent a good amount of time with them. I do not believe that there are racial anxieties driving this. I don't think that is very high up in the mix for most people. I do believe this is primarily an economic phenomenon. And I know there's a debate around the Gallup poll saying, well, according to these interviews, these people are not as quote unquote directly impacted by trade competition. But I think that's a very narrow view, and trying to understand the Trump phenomenon with statistics is what led us to the utter disaster of the pundit class getting it wrong at every stage up until now.
Okay, but let's back away from it a little bit then, because minorities have experienced much of the same economic impact of trade, much of the same economic anxiety, the same pressure from wages. Mm-hmm. Latinos have experienced it. Black folks have experienced it. And their support for Trump is basically zero.
Sure.
And in the case of Latinos, hovers around 20%. So that's hard to square with what you're saying.
That's where culture comes in. And then you say, well, that's just a racist culture. And yes and no, it's complicated. And I know that seems like a cop-out, but it's also true. And I think that's gotten lost in this debate where people think it has to be one or the other. But I do believe that the average Trump supporter is not only not necessarily a sort of blunt racist, but generally has more empathy. And if you talk to these people at length, as I have, I just didn't encounter a lot of racism. And people had plenty of opportunity to come out with it. I mean, often we were drinking a lot of beers, and I wasn't, you know, challenging people or pouncing on them for saying something that was offensive. You know, and they're more culturally comfortable with Trump as opposed to a candidate, say, a candidate like Sanders, who is maybe making similar arguments with regard to trade. Culture matters, and it's not reducible to racism.
Well, you went through Pennsylvania in this book, and it's one of the chapters that was closest to my heart because that's where I'm from. You sat down with a couple of former coal miners in Western PA. I just want to read this one passage because, to me, it kind of distilled a lot of the Trump phenomenon. You have one subject who says, "We have veterans in our streets. When you have a war veteran sleeping on cardboard, somebody dropped the ball. I don't believe Trump will allow that to happen anymore. I really don't. I believe if he takes office, the economy is going to change. My biggest and only concern with him is he may create World War III." I mean, that's just my only concern. The world may be destroyed, take care of the economy.
Yeah, that was John Beattie, who is a great interview subject. I spent a few days with him. He's a former miner, currently on disability. You spend time with a guy like Beattie, and caricatures get, you know, complicated. And that was sort of the whole point of this. We're sort of in gladiatorial mode now, and everyone wants an easy kind of profile that they can just hang and stop thinking about this. But if you spend time with the average Trump supporter, there's a very good chance, not necessarily, not guaranteed, but there's a very good chance that the caricature, the stereotype, will be severely compromised. Because often the same person who's shouting something at a rally, you know, you get them outside of that environment and you give them time to reflect. There's a lot of self-awareness and critical thinking there that you wouldn't expect.
Let's assume for the end of this interview that Hillary Clinton is going to be the next president. What happens to this phenomenon if and when Donald Trump loses this election?
Well, it's going to curdle, and my guess is grow, and there's going to be a lot of people trying to pick up the pieces. And in a way, the story right now is a race against, I don't want to be too dramatic, but sort of race against time to see who can answer the needs of these people first, whether it's something darker than is represented by Trump's campaign or something more broad and inclusive and more American in its promise.
The book is The Gilded Rage, A Wild Ride Through Donald Trump's America by Alexander Zaychik, a trip through the Rust Belt, through the middle of America, talking to hundreds of Donald Trump voters. Alexander Zaychik, thanks for being on.
You're very welcome.